Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, let's take a look at the business stories that are making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by broadcaster and businesswoman Nora Casey.
Hello.
And Bob Hoffman of Vista Executive Search. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
You're very welcome as well. So, Nora, we might start with you on the front page of the Irish Independent. It's budget wall to wall. But basically, there's a summary of the budget in the headline. Big cut to inheritance tax, free school books for all pupils, and whatever else you're having yourself.
And the devil and all. Well, you know, there's no doubt that everything that's in this budget has been discussed and debated. I don't know if there'll be many surprises on Tuesday. I wish there were a few surprises, because we're down in the valley. And although this is a crowd-pleasing budget, pre-election budget, there's a little bit for everyone. This tax, this USC stuff, this, you know, issues around child benefit, inheritance tax. But really, this is a time when Ireland needs to be up on the mountain. And from that vantage point, be able to see the kind of things that we need to have more robust investment in. And the kind. So first of all, I would say, don't groan. Gender equality in Ireland has slipped significantly. We're ninth in Europe. We have the lowest drop in all member states. And one of the biggest areas for improvement is women and work. And what is that linked to? It's linked to childcare provision. And there is very little that's been talked about. I agree with the government's stance to move that into the primary care, the primary education field, creating campuses, because everything about what we do with our children, and there is no distinguishment between care and education. Whoever cares for your child to allow you to go out to work is also their chief educator.
Yeah.
And we have leaders and politicians in this country and entrepreneurs who all have talked about their early childhood experiences, where we learn about languages, social skills, other kids. We cannot keep kicking that down the road, because this budget should be about future generations. We have lots of young families out there. There's a story in the papers today from one who said they were paying $2,000 for their three kids in creche costs. Not only is there a distinct lack of provision, we've almost wholesale put it into the private sector.
Yeah.
We need to wrestle that back. The second thing I would say is Research Ireland, Bobby, you must agree with me on this. R&D spend is abysmal in Ireland. We're the lowest in Europe. We keep talking about year on year, making sure that we spend more in R&D. Research Ireland had a very rocky start, if you remember, with its CEO. It's still trying to find its feet. It's still woefully underfunded. And the last area that we need to do from up in the mountain is AI. We're still talking about a digital strategy to get SMEs online by 2030. Meanwhile, I'm travelling all over the world talking to people about AI and the potential. There is a distinct need for us to talk to people who are not in the know. The AI Council was established this year. Lots of people who know a great deal about AI talking to each other, and I don't disagree that that's not important. But what the hell are we doing to allow small business owners, you know, for what they need to know about AI and how they can capture it, how they can use it? It's a very innovative ecosystem. And we were out of the traps 3 years ago, by the way, leaders in this field. We've just dropped significantly.
Yeah.
So I don't disagree with all the crowd-pleasing measures in the bud, badly needed, cost of living issues, inflation issues. We still need to be more innovative in our thinking.
Bob, we've a surplus of 25 billion, and Nora's articulated very eloquently there some of the ways that we should spend it. But, you know, we're going to come to this later. How this money is spent is almost the problem facing the government. The fact that we have it is brilliant, but it seems to be a dilemma on how we actually spend it.
Look, it's a high-class problem. So if everybody remembers, every budget, there's three elements. One is the tax side of it. The other is infrastructure. And the third is the national debt. It hasn't gone away. So let's just concentrate on the tax aspect. So the headline is capital acquisition tax or inheritance tax, as most people would know it, going from 335 to 400,000. Bear in mind, pre-crash, it was up at 600,000 or 700,000. Fine Gael were worried about their heartland, South Dublin. And before people sort of cry crocodile tears, bear in mind, the poor people there, yes, they do get more inheritance, but also they pay double for housing than the rest of the country. Yeah. So it swings in roundabouts. Other headlines, free schools for all children, which is good, and €1,000 off registration fees. There'll be a 1% cut, apparently, in USC rates. The tax band will widen from 42 to 44,000. So all in all, what does that mean to the average person listening in this morning? If you're on €52,000, which is just about the average industrial wage, you'll be €650 better off per year.
Yeah.
To put it into context.
Yeah, €650.
You're not bad.
It's still $650 up rather than $650 down.
Exactly.
As is the usual scenario. Interesting then, the analysis around the budget. And you're right, Nora. We know, I think, everything that's to be known about what's coming. I think the latest surprise was that we'd even more money than we thought we had when the corporation tax receipts were analysed yesterday or the day before. The Apple money as well.
Yeah.
You know, taking that in, certainly accounting for it in 1 year, even though it comes in two, that's probably politically motivated.
Yeah, exactly.
In the sense that we have it now and we'll get the kudos for spending it, and whoever comes afterwards won't really have any say in it.
Two great pieces to read today. John Burns, just because you referenced it, and John Burns, you know, in the Times was talking about that as they were walking down to deliver the news on the tax receipts for forecast for 2024, that there were almost, you know, there was more money coming into the coffers by the second. So it ended up at 105 billion. But remember, 38 billion of that is corporation tax.
Yeah.
And I still worry about that all the time, that there's issues around the Apple billions. What if Trump comes in and, you know, we have a trade war and that investment is diminished? But the other great piece is Cliff Taylor's in the Times, because he describes it as a budget of two halves. The first one, of course, we know is the quick fixes. It's an extension of all the things that were given in the 2024 budget to help people deal with the very real life issues of cost of living increases. Although inflation has gone down, the inflationary impact is still being felt with high prices. So there are things that are not sustainable. And the other thing that's wrong, maybe in some ways, about those things, it benefits the rich as well as the poor. And maybe if we did something more imaginative, some of that money, some of those hundreds of millions, could go towards areas like child poverty. The second half, Bob has given us a great rundown. I would only say that the one thing I wish they would do something about is USC. It was an emergency tax. We're not in an emergency anymore. Nobody bloody understands it.
Sorry, everybody hates
frankly,
it. And rightly so.
And we as a society should be literate. People should, if I walked out the door now and talked to 20 people, they don't understand the USC rate. What are the bans? They're different to the tax bans. Nobody understands how it works or how, who disagrees that we should pay tax? Nobody does. But why do we have this ridiculous tax with different bans? It's almost incomprehensible to me and to all other people who work in business that we still have it at that level. Even if they cut it by 1%, at the moment it's people over a certain amount get 4%. That's the highest tax rate, 0.5%. That's all I know. It goes up to roughly 12 grand. I think somewhere in the middle of 40 grand, you start paying 4%. Get rid of it.
Bob, you mentioned the national debt there. Why is there such a temptation, or not, why are we not inclined to pay that down? It's a staggering amount of money. We have the money to do it, but it's almost seen like, why would you pay it back? Because you don't have to.
Well, I suppose the national debt, I think it's 230 billion. It sounds so big, but our economy's growing so strong, it proportionally shrinks. Statistically, we still owe the money. You know, some people in the middle are saying put a third of it off the national debt, a third of it on these tax cuts we've just discussed, and a third of it off infrastructure. Other economists are saying put the entire pot of money into infrastructure, because the country, we're 10 years behind infrastructure. And it just leads on to the other thing that Cliff Taylor mentioned. In other countries, for example, France, they're going to the EU and saying, look, we need more time to get our affairs in order. Britain is tackling black holes. Do you know what our big problem is? delivery is the Achilles heel of the Irish government at the moment. We can't build bloody bike sheds on time and within budget. Yeah. How are we going to absolutely rebuild this country? Where population is now 5 billion, we are creaking at the seams. My view is, if I had the levers of power, which is not an unlikely scenario, but I would put a third off the debt, third infrastructure, and a third off these tax cuts.
Yeah, no, it's amazing the coverage something like, you know, irresponsible spending gets, and that, you know, that somebody, that it actually almost overshadows the national debt.
Yeah.
It's an expenditure, excuse me, bad expenditure of 330,000.
Yeah.
Versus a national debt of 226 billion.
Yeah.
And all we're talking about is that's the way life works.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
exactly
the way the public, that's what they focus on.
Yeah.
And you know what? The politicians have to defend that, and good luck to them, because it's indefensible.
Well, what infuriates me is the Children's Hospital, because I sat on that board from 2007 to 2012. And it wasn't ours to reason why it was the matter site, because they'd already had a McKinsey report, an RKW report, a high-level task force that all said the matter site was fine. We weren't given the job of finding a site, but we were given the job of robustly trying to deliver on it, which myself, Harry Crosby, John Gallagher and others did, business people. And I can't tell you how much we nailed down that procurement. We got it to 650 million, 100 million lower than asked for. The delivery timescale was 2014. And then on board Planola, there was only four people on the board at the time because the government wasn't appointing anybody. Three people on board Planola said it was too big. Same size, by the way, as the Aviva Stadium. So we were happy enough to have a rugby stadium dominating the skyline, but God forbid it would be a children's hospital that we would be proud
of. And look at where we're now.
And look, we're at 3 billion. 650 million delivered in 2014. We had patient reps on that board. We could have delivered five health ministers later, by the way, and five in advance. So that's 10 health ministers. Three of them went on to be Taoiseach.
And 14 different completion dates.
And by the way, all the people who disagreed with the matter site wanted a greenfield site up in Newlands Cross.
We better move on. Willie Walsh, quite vocal about the cap in Dublin Airport, Bob. And again, I think he's a voice that I think he obviously has skin in the game, but he's a man who knows what he's talking about.
Well, I'm an aviation buff. I really, really am interested in this story. First of all, a big shout out to Willie. You know, we have an Irishman running one of the world's most critical organisations. 80% of the planet's air travel is ran by IATA. And between Ryanair and all the global leasing industry based out of Dublin, we really are in an aviation powerhouse. But basically, the article is about this cap. And I am stunned to read that last week, Bord Pleanála also issued a draft decision that they would cut the number of nighttime flights at Dublin Airport by 60%. Does the expression pouring petrol onto a fire mean anything to these people? I have a real bee in my bonnet about Bord Pleanála. But the gist of it is, everybody knows we've hit a cap. There's three solutions to this. 30% of people who land at Dublin Airport, when they get out of the plane, they drive west. And it was on the news during the week, why can't we increase capacity at Cork and Shannon? It'll be no surprise that the DAA came out and poo-pooed that idea. It seems logical. And the second thing is, why don't we start looking at a smaller regional airport for Leinster, somewhere around Port Arlington or Athlone or Drogheda or Greystones? It's not, every other big city has one.
To quote Willie Walsh, to suggest, as some have, that Cork and Shannon airports can take up the demand betrays a fundamental ignorance of how aviation works. That says it all. Uh-huh. Nora, some good news in Cork, 100 new jobs in Workvivio.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's great to see nice news, especially about what started as an Indigenous Irish company in 2017. I think it was John Goulden and Joe Lennon, right, who started?
Yes.
Yeah. And then it was bought by Zoom. So they have substantial backing, obviously, globally. And they have 100 jobs over the next 2 years. It's a, for those of you who don't know, it's an employee communications platform. Of course, that became quite big during COVID and has remained big with hybrid working. So
yeah.
Lovely story.
What's also good is that they're able to operate as their own business within the Zoom
exactly
framework.
They even describe it as Workvivio by Zoom.
Yeah, you know, which is great that they were able to keep their identity.
Yeah.
So good luck to them. Bob, this is probably another bee in your bonnet, but funders won't touch Irish wind sector over policy uncertainty. This is unbelievable what's been said here by Kevin Lynch, the CEO of, is it, Source Galileo.
Yeah, I have a big bonnet. I have loads of bees flying around inside it. So I live in Wicklow Town, and we're looking out at what's going to be the Codling Wind Farm, which will go from Wicklow Harbour to Greystones Harbour. It's one of five that have been approved. It doesn't mention it in this article by John Mulligan, but do you know there's still no designated port in Ireland to bring all these turbines into? And guess why? Because of the planning. So it keeps going back to the planning. But the gist of this story is that Kevin Lynch says that he met foreign investors. They've invested with us in Norway, but they won't touch offshore Ireland because Ireland is faffing around. He says what Ireland is doing is fundamentally different from what everybody else in Europe is doing. He said that offshore renewable energy plans, it fundamentally were far behind. The government in Norway gave out a demonstrator grant of 200 million to them to build a test site, I guess, in Norway. But here in Ireland, we're just bogged down in red tape and delays. And
my God. He says, Nora, as well, for some reason, Ireland has ended up with the best possible resource, but is last place in Europe.
Now, I would just
That's
like
a horrible indictment.
To go back to the budget, because what we never discussed was wicked problems. Wicked problems are problems nobody can solve, and climate change is one of them. And we don't address those issues, which is all tied up with green energy. And we need to do that with a citizen's viewpoint. I don't know why we've lost all our involvement of citizens and citizens' assemblies, and it seems politicians and, you know, civil servants are the people. It's outrageous that we have that resource and that we have no clear plan for it.
Just one final note on this. Our next door neighbour have got an awful lot of things wrong in recent years, but Britain is the world leader now in wind. So we've got an example of how to do it right next door, and here we're just bogged down.
And in Norway.
Yeah. I don't know what your views are on St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, Nora. Fans of the Victorian pastiche architecture of Stephen's Green Shopping Centre will be no doubt frustrated because there's been a further planning delay here.
Yeah, so those I remember it being opened in 1988. It was the most exciting thing that had ever happened in Dublin. We went along and this huge, as Frank McDonald called it, a wedding cake. You know, I think he called it something like a speedboat, did he? What did he call it?
I know, a paddle boat without its paddle.
A Mississippi river boat.
Missing the wheel.
That got stranded somehow on Stephen's Green. And the clock. And, you know, it was something that, like, we've never seen anything like that in Dublin. It's not listed, but it's definitely warm to my heart and loads of people's hearts. Even Frank McDonald has turned around and decided he's in favour. It was bought. So, of course, we all saw the slow demise. I have no idea why.
I was in it yesterday. And it is kind of tired, it's sad,
it's very tired.
It needs energy.
Well, why does that happen? Like, we had a beautiful facility, gorgeous space. They just obviously didn't do the deals with the big retailers and get the magnet people.
I think once the tenants start to struggle, you know, once you've got an environment where the ability of the tenant to pay the rent is out of sync with what the landlord is looking for.
Exactly.
And you head down the road of where do we go next?
But even Antoshka have described it as highly generic and anonymous. This is the new suggested. In other words, it's a big glass box that they're planning on putting in. And the board was supposed to have decided the matter by September the 23rd, but a backlog of other cases means the decision has been delayed.
Are you talking about on board Plenon?
Board Plenon, yet again.
Let's move on to O'Connell Street, Nora. A nice piece by Philip Nolan.
Oh, so lovely.
In today's Mail. Basically, even a potted history of the street, how it's changed, where it's at now.
Yeah.
Lovely to read it. I enjoyed the article.
You know, my parents got their ring in the ring house, which I think was McDowell's.
And I still have the box. Weirs now.
Yeah, I have the box with the, and I remember excitedly seeing Madame Nora, the shop opening across the road from the bus stop I used to get. And, you know, when he starts to describe the history, of course, Sackville Street and how it, even the battle I didn't know of it going back to O'Connell Street, named for Daniel O'Connell, and the people power in terms of them saying, no, it's not going to be called anything other than O'Connell Street. And then the lovely history of the Metropole being demolished and the Carlton and the eyesores and its slow demise. And you're like, and even when he reminded us of, you know, the spire going up where Nelson's Pillar used to be, and they made the road wider and it became a big wind tunnel, which is exactly what it is. I mean, I put on my extra duffel coat when I go down it now and look at it now, and they have four or five pundits, including Dermot Bannon and...
Maybe Bob might enlighten us on that because there was three solutions to what can be done now to save the street, which is kind of a sub-piece within the article. A Dr. Carol Pollard, Hugh Wallace, again, I'm wearing glasses similar to his, and Dermot Bannon. And basically, Bob, what Dr. Carol Pollard is saying is make it like Malaga. Hugh Wallace is saying get people living there. And Dermot Bannon is saying it needs a new purpose. That's a summary of what they're saying. But
I think companies have personalities. It's called culture. I think buildings and streets also have personality. Mm. And the personality of this street now is schizophrenic. It's grand. It's our national main street. But it's also got this schizophrenic personality of just being a bit dodgy part of the city. We've got to change the personality of the street before we start going and building things or pedestrianizing it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think the needs of the consumer, the people who consume O'Connell Street, have changed.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a very broad way, the street has to reflect that. So it's probably not all about department stores and retail. It's about so much more than that.
Well, yeah,
about nightlife. It's about entertainment.
Exactly.
It's about...
Because one thing you can't buy off Amazon is getting your nails done or your hair done or a meal or so it should be an experience street, not a retail street.
Well, it's a nothing street at the moment, so something needs to be done.
Finally, Nora, staying with Philip Nolan, a drop in standards. He's talking about basically driving habits.
I know
you might enlighten us, but some of his statistics are quite interesting.
The only thing I'd say as an opener is whatever we're doing with all the money we're pouring into our roads, it's not working. I mean, I feel I'm reading two or three times a week about terrible accidents and people losing their lives. So this is an AA survey, which I think you have to read between the lines of it. So it says over 90% of respondents agreed that after driving under the influence of drink or drugs, so 90% after driving, they were the worst driving behaviours was using mobile phones while at the wheel, speeding and aggressive driving. But he goes on to say he doesn't believe that 82% who claim they never use their phones while driving couldn't be true.
So he says he sees the other 18% every day. So is that all he's looking at? That there's only 18%?
That could be a reflection of the fact that lots of people, including myself, have mobile phones that are linked into our car system.
But he's right. It's a real problem.
Yeah.
I love his language. He says only 12% admitted using bus lanes during the restricted hours. Again, I smell a rat.
I don't know. Do I witness it? I live in Dublin and I go down to Leitrim every weekend to where my mother's from. I have to say Dublin driving, you know, you get all of the different things around bus lanes and things like that. Not as much as I would have seen in the past, but oh my goodness, once you get outside of Dublin, you go into rural Ireland, the driving is overtaking, speeding. I mean, real issues.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks for a great review of the business stories indeed and some others. Broadcaster and businesswoman Nora Casey and Bob Hoffman, Vista Executives.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.